first Republican state lawmakers across the country are trying to tighten up their state's voting rules. According to the Brennan Center for Justice, there have been more than 100 bills in 28 states. More than a third of them include limits on mail-in ballots. Others deal with strengthening voter ID requirements and registration, as well as making it easier to remove people from voter rolls. They're not just advancing in traditionally red states, but also ones that voted for Donald Trump in 2016 and flipped for Joe Biden in 2020. The push comes after the November election, which had the highest percentage turnout nationwide in modern times. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How much confidence do you have in Wisconsin's elections? Has voting become a little too easy, do you think, or should it be made easier? How do you feel about the notion of voting by mail? Are there changes you'd like to see to Wisconsin election laws? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. David Schultz is a professor of political science and law at Hamline University and professor of law at the University of Minnesota. His areas of expertise include election law. David, good to have you back on the show.
Thanks for having me again. I appreciate it.
What, David, do you see driving these pushes for changes in election law at the state level, mostly coming here from Republicans?
Well, I think what it is in some sense is what I'm going to call sort of a push for what's called sort of the second great disenfranchisement in American history. And what I mean by that is that if we think about the first great disenfranchisement occurring after the Civil War, after Reconstruction ended, here we're sort of seeing the same thing. And it really started somewhere in the 90s. 1990s, or maybe after Florida 2000 and the 2000 election, where there developed a partisan split over voting rights, where the Democrats still want to be able to expand the electorate, still want to make it easier for people to be able to vote. And Republicans are operating with a couple of premises. One, they're still operating with a premise that there is widespread voter fraud in the United States, and therefore we need to crack down on that fraud. And then I think the second premise that they're arguing here is that in some sense that voting has become too easy, that even though voting is supposed to be a fundamental right, they're arguing that we've just made it way too easy and therefore risking even more the possibilities of increased voter fraud in our political system.
Well, let's look at either side of that equation. Concerns that there is, on a significant scale, voter fraud. A lot of talk about that, of course, after November's election. What do we know about fraud in voting in the United States?
Well, what we know about it is not just in terms of what's happened in the court cases since 2020, but if we go back over about a 20-year period, and what we know during a 20-year period, if we look at numerous studies, the Brennan Center has done some. We look at, for example, the Walter Cronkite School of Journalism did a massive study many years ago, that the significance of widespread voter fraud in the United States is really non-existent. The way I sometimes describe the state of voter fraud in America, and this is true in terms of the percentages here, many of us have a better chance of buying a Powerball ticket and winning the Powerball than showing that widespread voter fraud is a problem in the United States. We had numerous studies that spoke to that before 2020. And since the 2020 election, there were approximately 60 lawsuits brought by Donald Trump or his associates seeking to argue that there was widespread voter fraud and therefore we needed to overturn the elections in several states, including Wisconsin. And the courts, again, over 60 cases with state level, federal level, judges appointed by Trump, non-Trump, all reach the same thing, that there is no widespread voter fraud in the United States. And then if we also look at the fact that we had recounts in several states after 2020, that yet again confirmed that there isn't this voting machine errors, there isn't sort of rigs in our system, things match up. And as Americans, we ought to be incredibly proud by the fact that especially during a pandemic and one of the most taxing times in our lifetime, that our elections largely produced reliable results. But having said that, the Republicans, many Republicans still are operating under this belief that there is widespread voter fraud. And I know many people want to argue that the claim of voter fraud is merely a facade for what? For an effort to try to disenfranchise voters or to try to rig the elections so that they'll be more favorable to Republicans.
Talking to David Schultz, political scientist at Hamline University, professor of law at the University of Minnesota, looking at efforts in a number of states by Republican-led legislatures to tighten up voting rules. Now, on the other hand, David, we'll get into some specific changes, but, you know, tightening up voter ID requirements for mail-in votes or limiting mail-in ballots are just a couple of the changes. You know, they may make it a little more difficult, but are these really huge barriers? Are these things that are going to disenfranchise a lot of people the way, say, an old-fashioned poll tax or those discriminatory quizzes given to the Deep South back in the old days? Are they really disenfranchisement on that kind of scale?
Well, if we think of voting as sort of a cost, and what I mean by that, the more burdens that are associated with showing up to vote, the fewer people will actually cast a ballot. And the reason why I mention it is that because of the pandemic last year, where more people took advantage of absentee voting, or more people took advantage of state laws that eased voting, is partly the reason why we saw this expansive or expanded number of people who voted with a near modern record turnout. And I mention this because we dramatically expanded the turnout, but with what? Still no evidence of widespread voter fraud. That's one point. The second point is that there is some evidence that some laws, such as voter ID laws, do impact people, especially people of color. They make it difficult, and poor people, I should say, who might not have the money to be able to get what? To get the birth certificates or to get the other papers they need to verify who they are for the purposes of voting. And we also know, for example, that in most states, what your driver's license serves as an approved government ID. There are many people in the United States, including the elderly, including the poor, who don't have a driver's license, and that the cost of associated with getting, in lieu of a driver's license, a government-approved ID would dissuade them from voting. So we do have fairly good evidence that the more difficult we make it to vote, the fewer people will actually cast ballots. But at the end of the day, I think we should all still recognize the fact that yes, at the end of the day, we do have to worry about the integrity and the security of our elections and have mechanisms in place to protect against fraud. But we do have those in place already across the country, whether they are in terms of registration laws, election judges if you vote in person, and a variety of other mechanisms to try to ensure that we don't have the type of fraud that many people allege.
And when it comes to mail-in voting, and that's a subject to many of these laws, some of these laws would dial back access to mail-in voting. But, you know, isn't that kind of a recent invention? I mean, not completely, but widespread mail-in voting wasn't the norm not that long ago. Are we really losing that much if we go back to the older status quo where most of us have to vote in person?
Well, first off, for most places, it was usually you had to vote on the day of the election in person unless you could get an absentee ballot, and you had to basically say that you were going to be unable to make it that day because of what? You'd be out of state, you'd be in the hospital or something like that. And so traditionally, it was only allowing for absentees for excuse, but there was no right to vote absentee. And we have expanded it and made it easier and easier to vote. Over the last several election cycles, we've increased the percentage of people who've been able to vote by mail. We have several states in this country that is exclusively voting by mail. And again, what we know in those states is that the evidence of voter fraud is statistically insignificant. And so the way I'm sort of moving my argument here is that given the fact that it becomes easier for people to vote if you can allow for mail-in voting, the fact that in this election we had dramatic turnout increases because of mail-in voting, and the fact that we really have no evidence of widespread voter fraud, why would we want to go back? Why don't we say that in a country which says that the right to vote is supposed to be fundamental, shouldn't we be making it easier? Shouldn't we be enhancing the opportunities for people to be able to cast their ballots?
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Gary is with us in Iron River. Gary, hi.
Hi, good afternoon, guys. Say a couple comments. One, a problem with finding voter fraud is you have to look for it. In Wisconsin, we have the absentee ballot system. You can get an absentee ballot without an ID if you certify or attest, you and your witness, that you're indefinitely confined. Way more people than normal did that this last election. And as best I can find out, nobody's ever checked to see how many of those people were indefinitely confined, and attesting or claiming that is a felony. Second, we talk about recounts, and recounts are good, and they prove that the system in terms of being able to count is fine, but they don't prove that the system of who voted is fine. So I think we have to look and then accept what we find.
Gary, thanks a lot for the call. Let's start with that second point first. A recount counts the ballots that are there. Gary's worried about the origin of those ballots and if they were legitimate in the first place, David.
Okay, I think his point is well taken, because you're right that the recounts really just established that, in fact, the original count was correct. But that's important because for people who have been claiming, for example, that voting machines have been rigged, the recounts are a way of addressing it. But in terms of the issue about, let's say, absentee or mail-in voting or early voting, again, the best response to the caller is to say that, what, across the country, over 60 lawsuits were filed. And at no point was anybody able to marshal the evidence to show that there was the type of fraud that the caller asserted. I mean, this is not my opinion here. This is the fact that we went through an independent judiciaries across the country, state and federal courts. And when people were given the opportunity to say, show me the fraud, show me a situation where somebody who was ineligible to vote cast a ballot, evidence was not there. And at some point, you have to say that the absence of evidence means what? That there is no evidence. And at this point, unless somebody can affirmatively show, bring real evidence forth to prove their point, this is mere speculation that's really unfounded. And I think that becomes one of our myths in our society right now. And that myth about widespread voter fraud has been used in the past as an excuse to what? Again, to keep people from voting. And just so we understand here is that, you know, after the Civil War, it was the Democrats who were arguing widespread voter fraud, especially in the South, to prevent people from voting. The freed slaves. It was many people, including Democrats, in the late 19th, early 20th centuries, who were arguing that it was widespread voter fraud to keep people who had emigrated and become citizens in the United States. And so I mention this because at different times in history, the claim of voter fraud has taken on a different partisan banner. And right now, the partisan banner is by the Republican Party.
Thanks for that call, Gary. We're looking at a push by Republican lawmakers in many states to change election laws after the 2020 elections. David Schultz is with us, professor of political science and law at Hamline University and professor of law at the University of Minnesota. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are there places where you'd like to see election laws a little tighter, maybe here in Wisconsin or around the country? Or do you want to see reforms and changes to make it easier for people to cast a ballot? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation on a push by Republican lawmakers in many states to change election laws. David Schultz is with us, professor of political science and law at Hamline University. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see more efforts to tighten up voting laws, or do you think it should be easier to vote? What kind of changes in either direction would you like to see in Wisconsin or elsewhere? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. We'll go back to your calls now. Dennis is with us in Two Rivers. Dennis, hi.
Hi. Okay. Trump and other Republicans won some elections in some states. Did the Republicans or Trump ever say there was voter fraud in those states they won?
Dennis, thanks for the call. David, Dennis saying the Trump campaign, I guess, fixated on states that they lost and looking for voter fraud and election changes there.
Yeah, well, there may be some Republican legislatures in those states, that are making those claims, and I don't know, but no, for the most part, I did not see or have not seen anything where the Trump campaign went to court claiming that there was widespread voter fraud in, let's say, a Mississippi, Alabama, or something like that. And conversely, we didn't see Democrats go to court in the states that Trump won to also make that claim. Now, what really sort of what we're looking at is a pattern here. It was those critical swing states, those Pennsylvanias, those Michigans, Wisconsins, Georgia's where the focus was. And so it was very strategic in the sense of saying that there's only fraud in states that we think we should have won.
Thanks for the call. We'll go to Laura Lee now in Arizona. Laura Lee, hi.
Hi, yes. Well, until just now, I thought that this was all just a hooey by the Republicans, the vote for voter fraud. But on the other hand, gerrymandering, I think, is a form of rigged elections, if you want to call it that. And that's widespread all over the country.
Laura Lee, thanks for the call. Big issue over the next year or two, David, gerrymandering and the way we draw our political lines. Do you see momentum on changing that around the country? Do you see it as a significant problem?
Well, first off, gerrymandering is treated by the courts as a form of sort of voting rights type of issue. That if the lines are drawn in a way that don't have the proverbial one person, one vote, for example, or they're drawn in a way that are racially discriminatory, the courts have generally analyzes through sort of the right to vote. So the caller. Intuition is absolutely correct on this. Now, one of the issues that I think, and Wisconsin was the center of this, last few years, was the claim all about what? Partisan gerrymandering, about lines being drawn to favor one party at the expense of the other. And the Supreme Court largely washed its hands of this issue. But even though U.S. Supreme Court has says they're not going to address this issue, we're now seeing state courts across the country. Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and others who are treating us under the state constitutions, and many states such as Arizona and Iowa have nonpartisan, excuse me, redistricting commissions.
That's okay. Thanks for that call. We're talking to David Schultz, professor of political science and law at Hamline University, election law expert, looking at proposed changes in many states around the country, often by Republican legislatures, often making it a little tougher to vote or tightening up some guidelines. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Yordis is with us in Colfax. Yordis, hi.
Hi, I worked elections for over 20 years, and it is there's a very detail-oriented work to have cross checks to make sure things are correct. And when there's absentee ballots, for instance, at the end of the night, just on a normal day, I don't care if it's a tiny election just in your town, everything has to line up. All the numbers have to match. If it's absentee, there's a list, and we have the ballots, and it has to match the ballots. And if there's any problem, we have to look through, and the whole group is working on it. So it's not just one person doing it. If there's 5 people or 10 people, everyone is involved. Everyone has their eyes on the process. And I just wish that more people would get involved in working elections and they would understand the detail and the care that is put into doing it correctly. And they should praise the people that conduct these elections and manage them so well, because it's extraordinary.
Yordis, thanks for sharing your experience. David, your thoughts on the people actually doing this work in person?
I think this is a really important thing to understand, because what the caller is talking about here is how election judges, who are largely volunteers, or if they're paid, it's like it's minimal at best. But these election judges all across the country are really, in many ways, our front line of defense against voter fraud. And as she pointed out, there's numerous processes, rules, cross-checking that are in place. It would take a conspiracy of epic proportions to be able to rig a system. And at every precinct across the United States, we have what? It's usually bipartisan. We've got Democrat, Republican. In some states like Minnesota, we oftentimes had people who are also independents. But the point being is that if we actually looked at the mechanisms in place for how ballots are checked, how they're counted, how they're verified, we have numerous, what I'm going to call good redundancies in the system that screen out and address those fraud issues. And somehow, if we had this widespread voter fraud, I would think we would be hearing all these election judges screaming and saying, my gosh, this is going on. In fact, we're not hearing that.
Thanks for the call. Time for one more caller. Jan is with us in Arena. Jan, hi.
Hi. Arena is one of the districts that was ripped out of its normal voting section by the Republicans, and we are very unhappy about it. A little corner of our district was ripped out and put up in the northern district because we were too Democratic. But anyway, that's not why I called. I called to say that I hear so many people complaining about there was so much fraud because of all the absentee ballots that came in, and they were all complaining that, well, I know that so-and-so was out and about, and they're not bedridden, and they're not confined to their home, so they shouldn't have been allowed to ballot by absentee. Well, we voted absentee, my husband and I. We are not bed-bound. We are not confined to the house, but we're in our 80s. And in this year of the COVID problem, we elected to vote absentee because of that, and we thought it was perfectly legal.
Jan, thanks for the call. Just briefly, it is legal. The question is over voter ID for absentee ballots. That's where the indefinitely confined thing comes in. Thanks for sharing your thoughts, though. David, just 30 seconds. What are you watching for over the next year in possible voting changes?
What I'm watching for at this point is exactly what we've been talking about here. Are there going to be efforts to try to make it more difficult to vote early? Are there going to be efforts to, let's say, for example, at the congressional level, where Democrats are talking about perhaps trying to establish federal uniform laws regarding voter ID, early voting, and so forth. So I guess sort of the moral of the story is we're going to see at both the state and federal level an increased partisan battle over voting rights.
David, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you. My pleasure.
David Schultz is a professor of political science and law at Hamline University and professor of law at the University of Minnesota. We talked to him today about a push by state Republican lawmakers around the country to tighten up voting rules.